So I'm sure, I'm really sure, because I've mentioned it a couple times, that today is the annual, you know that today is the annual Walk for Hunger, an amazing event. Over 46 years, the Walk has generated more than $100 million through individual contributions of less than $100, which is a powerful demonstration, the website reminds us, of neighbors caring for neighbors. Project Bread is also really clear that they work to develop programs that help to provide sustainable access to healthy, nutritious food to those in need, because the opposite of hungry isn't full, it's healthy. So kudos to our walkers, some of whom joined us this morning, having been out bright and early, and to the many of you who've walked in the past, or pledged in the past, or hopefully pledged this year to support this amazing initiative. I've been reading a lot about hunger recently, primarily because Andy and I have been working with our youth to organize the hunger banquet that will be here, as you heard, in the parish hall next Saturday at 6 o'clock. It doesn't surprise any of us that hunger and health continue to be chronic problems across the globe. So we would do well to figure out how we can help address those issues by learning more and then acting. But thinking about physical hunger and the justice issues that impact it made me wonder about less tangible forms of hunger as well, about what it is that we each might hunger for spiritually, if you will. What is the first thing that comes to your mind in the morning when you wake? Imagine that you turn over quietly, and in the first haze of awareness, think to yourself, I wish. Or later in the day, maybe, when you find yourself staring off, seeing but not really seeing, and thinking to yourself, if only. Our collective world is so imperfect. We don't have to go as far as the tragic loss of life in Nepal to be aware. The events in Baltimore holding this week's top news attention underscore how challenged we are to live any semblance of equity or sufficient compassion for each other. We need to pay attention and we need to respond. But it is the quiet of our individual existence that I wonder about today. Pondering what each of us hungers for in the recesses of our hearts, in the places that barely, if ever, get spoken about out loud. And I wonder if much of that hunger has to do with feeling whole or not, and with belonging, not necessarily to anything in particular, but of being in a place and time where one feels one is meant to be, like the salt doll recognizing her location. I am the sea, she learns, though not without cost, of course. Her sense of wholeness is the awareness that she is essentially a part of, and indistinct from all that is, as we are. And if we each felt that wholeness, how much better might we be able to live together in the world, all of us together? So some of you may be thinking, I'm not sure what she's talking about. I'll feel better when I think of myself as dissolving into the ocean. That actually doesn't address what I had figured out I was hungry for, which may have been joy or peace or absence of fear or. So let's take a moment and think about that a bit. It is a radical notion that we are indistinct from everything and in that sense radically connected to all life and thus whole. With all our imperfections and our quirks and our losses and our wants, we are just as we are, whole. There's no need to long for anything. There's no need to hunger. Just as you are, whole and belonging, immersed in what is, right now, this instant. Can you feel that? Whatever loss you've experienced, whatever goal you have yet to achieve, whatever project is incomplete, whatever hole in you is wide open, you belong just as you are. Whatever you are hungry for is the very thing that makes you whole. You could put down your worries and just be whole, here, belonging. Now, whoever said, after all, that two seemingly contradictory things can't be true at the same time, that we are all disconnected, fragmented, imperfect, and whole all at once, that somehow we are the sea? So we back up a bit. Who among us came in here feeling that their lives were perfect today, just the way you are? I'm not talking about it's a pretty good day, or it's mostly fine. Who among us doesn't have one thing they wish were different, if not for themselves, than for someone they loved? The thing is, we live in a culture and in a time that encourages us, even the most cheerful and optimistic of us, to be dissatisfied with ourselves, with the world as a whole. Our culture says things could always and probably should always be better. And so often by better, the culture means more, really. We live in an environment that values unlimited change, unlimited growth, youth, wealth, status. So anything that falls short of that feels not quite right, not quite whole, and we all fall short. So then we are inevitably missing something that we find ourselves hungry for. I watched a terrific YouTube video recently with our youth called The Story of Stuff. Does anybody know that? That familiar? It's about how the things in our lives are built, how they're utilized, and then how they're disposed of, technically. And the story, which is originally a 20-minute little video, helps us to better understand the life cycle of all the things we live with, from TVs to clothing to cars. It was made in 2007 by a woman named Annie Leonard. She's the mastermind behind the Story of Stuff project. And it details the intentional integration of planned and perceived obsolescence in our daily lives. I think I've mentioned this before, that goods are made to last a shorter amount of time, so no more Mr. Maytag man, or that we are convinced on a daily basis that we need the latest and greatest, like an iPhone or the newest Nikes. This was a plan implemented after World War II to ensure continued economic growth in order to re-engage returning troops and the anticipated baby boom, and it all worked. We all were convinced, and we are all the victims of it. I mentioned to David Forsythe the other day that a contractor was in my house not long ago to give me an estimate for a project we're thinking about. And he looked around and he said, "Wow, this is such a 90s kitchen." Thought, what is a 90s kitchen anyway? So I felt like I should open up and look for like shoulder pads and old things. Shoulder pads were the 80s. Regardless, our economy and thus much of the way we live our lives is based on this idea of unlimited growth, of needing the next newer best thing. The reasoning is that our population is growing and thus we must grow our markets in order to indefinitely sustain ourselves. Now, many of you who are climate change people know that this is the definition of our current problem, right? We can't grow indefinitely in a finite environment. At some point, we're going to talk more about that issue. But for today, I want to focus on the other side of the effect of that, which is that in addition to the unsustainability of that model, It makes us feel bad all the time. We're either chasing our tails trying to keep up or frustrated that we haven't done enough. Sometimes it's about money or a new kitchen. Sometimes it's about health or achievement or the random state of affairs in the world. Sometimes is always not quite, something is always not quite right, and I might suggest increasingly so. So in this culture, we're not supposed to lose things either. We're not supposed to lose assets or jobs or relationships or health or youth or life. And if we have suffered loss, and who among us doesn't, somehow it feels not right, not natural, which is its own sort of crazy chasing. It's out of balance, and we find ourselves grasping at straws, or more correctly, grasping at each other. Baltimore is an extension of that very grasping, because poverty is an extension of it, and racism is an extension of it. Wholeness does not mean perfection. It means embracing brokenness as an integral part of life. That's a quote from Parker Palmer, who's a Quaker, a teacher, and author of a book called A Hidden Wholeness. I was so excited to read about this time he spent with a Quaker community where they utilized what he calls circle conversations. He says they were doing therapy and politics rightly understood, reaching in toward their own wholeness, reaching out towards the world's needs, and trying to live their lives at the intersection of the two. Reaching in, he said, reaching out. You can imagine how excited I was to read that from Parker Palmer. I want to give a shout out to Peter Walensky, who is the standing committee member who offered up those very words for our theater Parker Vision. And I'm not sure he'd even read Parker Palmer yet. Wholeness does not mean perfection. We don't need to be everything or have everything the way our culture might incline us to believe in order to be whole. And whole, by the way, is not about happy. Many of you may be aware that the West Roxbury Reads book this year was The Giver by Lois Lowry. The book addresses the issue of sameness, a decision that this community in the book made in order to be manageable and predictable and peaceful and safe and just. Rather than accepting pain or discomfort or differences, the community chose the value of sameness. There is a part of our lives today, of our culture today, that is imposing that very value on all of us. We should all want a new kitchen, a four-wheel drive car, a flat-screen TV. This year's teenagers wanted L.L. Bean boots. They couldn't even keep them in stock long enough. We should all look like B, athletic, straight hair, kind of that wispy, I don't know what. We should all behave like C, well-spoken but urban savvy, able to pay attention endlessly. We should be smart and funny. We are doing this to our children in our schools, and we do it to each other. Rather than accepting pain or discomfort or difference, it's an ironic tension that we're living in, trying to be unique and distinct while looking and acting like the latest cool thing. What has happened to us? If I trusted that my rock, chosen and held and fitted just so, with all its imperfections and abnormalities, was just the fit to hold up the wall, might my hunger be sated? I may not look like the rock next to me, but I'm the perfect rock for my spot, and we're all doing our task of fitting together, a part of the engaged holiness. But it's the holding on that gets us in trouble, the determination not to lose the toe to the water, not to lose the leg or our whole selves in the acknowledgement that we are life itself. We are the sea. And as a part of the great ocean of being where we are each whole and wholly one, there is room for all of us. I think this is our hidden hunger, to be fully connected, fully immersed, and not to be straining after more. Just for today, let's imagine it so. Let's think of ourselves as a part of all that is and see if it doesn't help us fill the hungry places in our souls. Because the opposite of hungry isn't just full, it's whole. So may it be. And amen.